I do not believe there ever was any life more attractive to a vigorous young fellow than life on the cattle ranch in those days. It was a fine, healthy life, too. It taught a man self-reliance, hardihood, and the value of quick decision. In short, the virtues that ought to come from life in the open country. I enjoyed the life to the full. After the first year, I built on the Elkhorn Ranch a long, low ranch house of hewn logs with a veranda, with, in addition to the other rooms, a bedroom for myself and a sitting room with a big fireplace. I got out a rocking chair. I am very fond of rocking chairs. And enough books to fill two or three shelves and a rubber bathtub so that I could get a bath. Then I do not see how anyone could have lived more comfortably. We had buffalo robes and bear skins of our own killing. We always kept the house clean, using the word in a rather large sense. There were at least two or three rooms that were always warm, even in the bitterest weather. We had plenty to eat. Commonly, the mainstay of every meal was game of our own killing, usually antelope or deer, sometimes grouse or ducks, and occasionally, in the earlier days, buffalo or elk. We also had flour and bacon, sugar, salt, canned tomatoes. And later, when some of the men married and brought out their wives, we had all kinds of good things, such as jams and jellies made from the wild plums and the buffalo berries, potatoes from the forlorn little garden patch. Moreover, we had milk. Most ranchmen at that time never had milk. I knew more than one ranch with 10,000 head of cattle where there was not a cow that could be milked. We made up our minds that we would be more enterprising. Accordingly, we started to domesticate some of the cows. Our first effort was not successful, chiefly because we did not devote the needed time and patience to the matter. We found that to race a cow 2 miles at full speed on horseback, then to rope her, while exhilarating as a pastime, was not productive of results. Gradually, we accumulated tame cows, and after we had thinned out the bobcats and coyotes, more chickens. Theodore Roosevelt, 1913. And now, the Great American Folk Show, a little place on the radio where we commune with you to share stories, sing songs, and talk to some good people with great voices. Stay with us over the next hour as we bring you musicians Sarah Moreau, Quinn DeVoe, Nina and Teresa Ricci, and Clinton Davis, plus author Michael Patrick F. Smith. He'll be reading from his new book, The Good Hand, a memoir of work, brotherhood, and transformation in an American boomtown. I'm Joe Wiegand. Good to have you with us. Here's your host, Tom Brousseau.
We begin today with Quinn DeVoe, a singer and songwriter from Gary, Indiana, now residing in Oakland, California. Check out his album from last year called Book of Soul. It's one of my favorites. It'll really get you moving. Is pumped with groove and rich with texture, and Quinn's voice is powerful and sincere. His songs today, a love song entitled Sweet One, and a song of protest called Shot Down. But first, let's hear his message.
Hey y'all, this is Quinn DeVoe, and I want to talk about connection. It's been a real hard year for a lot of us, and one thing that has kept me going is the people around me, people that I love, my friends, my family, being able to talk to them, go on little distant walks or whatever. Man, it's really kept me going having that net down there when I feel like I'm falling. And that's been really important in a way that it really wasn't before the pandemic. Some people, of course, some of us actually don't have a good network, don't have that set of friends and family to really lean on. And I have found, man, it's important to reach out to those people and say something, just let them know that you care. I haven't always done this, you know, I'm definitely not the best at that. But I've had to remind myself that, my friends, my people who don't have that network, who might live alone or just don't have it, it's important to remind yourself to reach out to them because they're alone in a different way than the rest of us. one of the things I've also realized is to stay connected to myself. You gotta, you know, some people don't have enough, some people have too much. You know, you get all packed in there, and you gotta remember to take yourself out on walks, or just lock yourself in your room and remind yourself of your own ideas and thoughts and visions, you know, and all of that. So that's been interesting as well. When I fully, you know, realize how important people are to each other, it also makes me think about the people in the past year that were taken, whose lives were taken for no other reason than racial animus, racial misunderstanding, you know, on the part of law enforcement or some type of, you know, vigilante activity. And it's a real shame, because knowing now how important we all are to each other, for these families to lose those people in such a senseless way, it's just a shame, and it needs to change in this country. It's just very important in light of how much we all need each other. You know, it's a brand new way of life that we're all trying to get used to, but we don't want to get too used to it. I mean, it makes me wonder how much of this will go back to the way it was, and how much will change forever. When we get back to some kind of normalcy in the world, I really hope to retain that feeling of connection that I have right now with my family, with my friends, and being able to lean on them and understand each other and support each other through this crazy life. We are all that we have.
Gonna get candy on a warm afternoon. The boy should have known he was just being rude. Along comes an outlaw to learn him the rules. Shot down not a moment too soon. Standing outside selling cigarettes, $5 he bought them, $10 he'd get. Police came by to take away his breath. Shot down not a moment too soon. Who do they think they are? Minding their business, doing no harm. It just seems suspicious, so that must be true. Shot down not a moment too soon. Playing on the lawn with a toy gun, pretending to be police, catching someone. 12 years old, having way too much fun. Shot down not a moment too soon. Stopped by the police for driving while black. She went for a smoke. He said, you can't do that. He took her to jail and she never came back. Shot down not a moment too soon. And who do they think they are? Minding their business, doing no harm. They just seem suspicious, so that must be true. Shot down not a moment too soon. And who do they think they are? Minding their business, doing no harm. They just seem suspicious, so that must be true. Shot down not a moment too soon. Shot down not a moment too soon. Shot down.
I happened across a music video last year of Nina Ricci, a performer from Nashville, Tennessee. In this music video, she was wearing a bolo tie, loose around the neck. The high crown hat atop her head was tilted back, and it looked like it could fall off, but then not quite. And a denim dress to boot. Very cool style, I thought. Her guitar playing was distinctive. I later discovered she learned her own way on the instrument when she was a young teen. She had a soprano voice, and it had gusto, just like the dust of the Queen of Folk, and it drew me right in. So I decided that I would reach out to her to see if she'd be interested in being a guest on the Great American Folk Show. I was given a phone number to call, and who should pick up on the other end but her mother, Teresa Ricci. Every artist needs representation. Who better than Mom, right? Well, it was a very pleasant conversation I had with Teresa and Ricci, and we all agreed that when the time was right, they'd both love to come on the show. So glad they accepted the invite, because I really think you're going to love them. It's a thrill to introduce to you Nina Ricci and her mother, Teresa Ricci.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
This is Teresa.
And Nina.
We're a mother-daughter team.
And we really are living a musical dream life.
We're burning up the roads with a 6-string guitar and a little chihuahua named Riley. Well, in April 2019, we started to tour. We toured on into February, so we were gone a little more than a year. We learned a lot and we laughed a lot and we drove a lot of miles. I think we were extremely brave in our exploration of the many cities that we visited. We slept well in almost every one of them, and we met many different people. We had a great time, wouldn't you agree?
Yes, we sure did, and I hope we get to do that in 2021, too.
Me too. So during the time that we were out, you wrote two songs that you're going to play today. Tell me what your inspiration was for writing All the Crown Jewels.
That inspiration began when I was 2 years old and you and Dad worked different shifts, him in the day and you in the night.
Are you going to tell that story about the basket of trinkets?
Yes, that's the one.
Well, I used to put out a big pallet to make a secure place for Nina while I was trying to catch up on my sleep, and I would put out baskets of treasures for her.
I'd pour out those baskets one by one on the quilt and pick up the little pieces with my hands. The sparkles kept me charmed for hours. That's when I began loving to look at shiny objects.
And we must both be part of the Crow family, as much as we like those sparkles.
Well, you do have a flock that follows you like you're their mother.
That is true, but that is a story for another time.
Fast forward to April 2019, we were staying with Aunt Margaret. When she said she had a jewelry collection she wanted to show us, I immediately thought, she's going to show us all the crown jewels. I decided to save the idea till I had time to write the song.
You do that saving thing quite often.
That's right, I do. Would you like to hear all the crown jewels now?
I would love to hear all the crown jewels now.
All the crown jewels, all the crown jewels. Margaret said she'd show me all the crown jewels. An eyeglass loop will magnify the light. And I can't wait till I get the glitter in my eyes. Glitter in my eyes, glitter in my eyes. Margaret's got a leather-covered snakeskin trunk. She told me to appraise and throw away the junk. It's hard to see the diamonds, they're all mixed in with the costume brooches and the riff-raff shims. All the crown jewels, all the crown jewels. Margaret said she'd show me all the crown jewels. An eyeglass loop will magnify the light. And I can't wait till I get the glitter in my eyes. Glitter in my eyes, glitter in my eyes. I saw a gin and a genie and the facets of a gem. And I fall under their enchantment. I don't need to steal, cause I eat with my eyes. They're filled to the brim with little flicker lights. All the crown jewels, all the crown jewels. Margaret said she'd show me all the crown jewels. And
do like that song, All the Crown Jewels, and we do have the same attraction for sparkles in common. I must tell you, though, your song Pretty with No Place to Go really hits home for me. Can you tell me what you were thinking about when you wrote it?
Well, I was learning a traditional folk song at the time, and I think something about the similarity of the character situation of feeling alone and your situation as a teenager living in the country prompted me to write the song.
I know the song is about my life in the country, but the sentiment rings true for any girl living in a small town. Even though we live in a modernized world now, it's still difficult to see past the county line. Will you sing Pretty with No Place to Go for us?
I sure will.
Nina, the finger picking on that song is truly exceptional. I love that calypso rhythm.
Thanks, Mom. And we want to say thank you to our great host, Tom Brousseau, and to Prairie Public Radio.
And to all the listeners. Thank you from Teresa
and Nina.
Happy trails!
There's a good book out there, published last month by Viking Press. It's called The Good Hand, a memoir of work, brotherhood, and transformation in an American boomtown. It's a nonfiction, first-hand account of what life is like working in the oil fields of western North Dakota. And if you've never been to western North Dakota, well, it's a wide-open expanse that that's part prairie and badlands and part blue sky. Really beautiful. People from all over flocked to western North Dakota, beginning in 2007, to the town of Williston to be part of the oil boom, to work hard and get paid. If you were lucky and you landed a job as an oil field worker, then your pay was considerable. But you weren't working 40 hours a week. You were doing double that. Some even worked 120 hours a week. And it wasn't a desk job. You were outside, in the elements. And you'd need to have grit. Michael Patrick F. Smith is the author of The Good Hand, and he's here to read an excerpt from it. Plus, he's also a singer, songwriter, and guitar player. He'll perform two original songs, Cans and See You Next Time on the Wind.
Unlike the other operators, the gruff crane operator drives the swampers around. "You're standing in the cold all day. I figure the least I can do is drive the truck," he barks. We are about to leave the yard, and there's an issue with power running to the trailer attached to the pickup. He gets out the fiddle with the cables. A fat bed truck driver sits in the passenger seat, and I'm stretched out in the back, a rare luxury. I haven't pulled my winter gear over my clothes yet, so I let the gruff crane operator work on the trailer by himself, but I feel a twinge of embarrassment. A good hand would be helping. Before I grow too guilty, he slides back into the truck and we start moving. A few miles down the road, the crane operator notices the trailer is still having problems. He pulls over to the shoulder and hops out. I hesitate a moment, but resigned to my duties, I zip up my jacket and leave the truck. I walk down the passenger side of the vehicle and around the back of the trailer. The crane operator isn't there. I'm confused only for a moment when the brake lights turn off and the truck starts moving without me. "Hey, wait up!" I holler, chasing after it. The truck pulls onto the highway and heads off down the road. I'm waving and jumping and whooping as the taillights fade down the stretch of country highway. It is 20 degrees below zero, and the sun has yet to rise. My breath crystallizes in front of me. I watch the crystals all but fall to the earth as soon as they appear. I look up. The sky is racked with stars. They pulse in brilliance through an atmosphere so thin and clean that I feel like if I reached up to grab them, they would burn my hand. But they wouldn't, so I don't. I stuff my hands into my jacket pockets as a single big rig barrels past me. It takes all of the sound with it, and the silence once it passes is full and strange. I start walking, my boots on icy gravel the only sound. The moments are fat, and I study them as I would a precious stone, turning them over in my mind's eye, both for their exquisite beauty and an investigation of their flaws. Under stars in this desolate place of such great silence, I feel minuscule and lonesome. Here I walk on a small blue planet in a galaxy that rolls onward and onward past the eternity of prairie that surrounds me. With every second, the cold grows outside and inside. It seeps up above my socks and claws at my ankles. It burrows through the zipper of my coat and snakes its way down the tender flesh of my neck. My feet rapidly begin to lose all feeling. The town of Ray is probably 20 miles distant, and the crunch of each step marks a meter toward an unattainable goal. I'd never make it that far in this weather. I'm as awake as I've ever been. Every second a gift unwrapping. Someone will pick me up, I know that. But for a moment, I'm as wild and free as a coyote, kicking down the dark highway before daybreak, my heart banging out a tattoo on my chest, death licking at my heels, the sky so big and open I could fall right through it. The truck pulls ahead in front of me, and I hop in. "Where you been?" asks the gruff crane operator. "Decided to take a walk, eh?"
knock it down in the cool air of the evergreen trees. Cans to the left of me, cans to the right. No, I can't get away from these cans. Cans in my bloodstream, cans in both of my hands. I can't get away from these cans. Back in high school, we'd build a pyramid out of them. We'd build it up just to knock it down. Well, that was a long time. It's funny, I never really think about it so much. But well, it seems like I build things up just to knock them down. Cans to the left of me, the right. No, I can't get away from these cans. Cans in my bloodstream, cans in both of my hands. No, I can't get away from these cans. No, I can't. Friend, he is a gentle giant. He's got a gap tooth in his grin. I've seen his heart fall on the floor, and I'll see him next time on the wind. See him next time on the wind. I'll see him next time on the wind. Doubled over, we are laughing stupid jokes again. I've seen us laugh till ribs were cracking. I'll see us both laugh on the wind. I'll see him next time on the wind. See us next time on the. You were feeling bad about a woman. She dumped you and chose him. I've seen you with your shoulders slumped. Well, I'll see you next time on the wind. I'll see you next time on the wind. See you next time on the wind. Fist fights out behind the bar. I don't believe you were born to sin. I've seen you hold a bird in your hands. I've seen you next time on the wind. See that bird next time on the wind. See you next time. Misfits, man, we were together. Swear to God, you are my kin. We saw rigs move across the Bakken. See you next time on the wind. See you next time on the wind. Yeah, I'll see you around. So boom down and hold your load. Crane operator ain't my friend. We've both seen the end of a cussin'. Well, we'll see you next time on the wind. When the crane operators sing, them crane operators are singing. Yeah, the crane operators sing. Pick your eyes up off your plate. Wipe the grease off your chin. I've seen you eat two full dinners. I'll see you next time on the wind. See you next time on the wind. See you next time on the wind. I'll see you next time on the wind. Yes, I will. See you next time on the wind. See you next time on the wind.
That was Michael Patrick F. Smith, playwright, songwriter, and author of The Good Hand, a memoir of work, brotherhood, and transformation in an American boomtown. You're listening to The Great American Folk Show. I'm your host, Tom Brousseau. It's good to have you along. Every now and then we do an artist spotlight, and today is Clinton Davis, a fiddler, banjo player, mandolinist, an all-around lover of stringed instruments, and a songster too. So let's hop to it.
Hey there, my name is Clinton Davis, and I am an old-time, full-time musician that lives right now in the city of San Diego, California. I grew up in a small corner of northern Kentucky, and I'm guessing if you're listening to this right now, you're probably somewhere in between. I want to talk to you a little bit about what old-time folk music means to me, maybe a little bit about what I think about when I'm playing old-time music. More specifically, I want to talk about instrumental fiddle tunes, like the one I'm playing in the background here. To me, this is some of the most beautiful music on earth. I think plenty of people hear music like this, and it sparks their imagination. I've played music like this at lots of gigs, and talked to lots of strangers afterwards that wanted to share images that were painted in their minds by the sound of the fiddle or the banjo. Folks might talk about pioneers or homesteaders or cowboys. A lot of people want to talk about George Clooney. Some people want to talk about animatronic bears at Disneyland. Music like this usually evokes something vaguely old and vaguely American, but the where and the when of the music is pretty loose. There's another side to these old tunes, though. There's a way that they live in the present, and they evoke real memories that are specific and personal. I think of old-time music as a musician's music, or a player's music. It's music that mostly exists amongst friends who are all players playing for themselves. They're not really playing for an audience or trying to be performers. When old-time musicians get together to play tunes like this one, they might take a melody that's barely 30 seconds long and just keep looping it for 15 minutes. But it's never an exact repetition. Good players will put a little bit of variation into a tune every time they repeat it. The ideal is to never play something the same way twice. When you do that, you're sharing a little bit of your personality or your own musical imagination with everyone else. When you hear someone else doing that, you can't help but absorb a little bit of their thought and a little bit of their imagination, or a little bit of their personality. So if I was jamming with some friends, and if I were to hear someone come up with a lick that I like, I might hang on to it, and then use it forevermore whenever I play that same tune. And every time I use that lick, it'll probably summon some memory of the person I got it from. Maybe I'll remember how that lick surprised me the first time I heard it. Or maybe I thought it was so cool that it just made me laugh out loud when I heard it. Maybe that lick will remind me how beautiful the weather was that day, and how nice it felt sitting in the shade. Maybe I'll remember something that someone said after the music that didn't have anything to do with the tune, but maybe it was really nice to hear. Old-time musicians will take a tune like that from place to place, playing with all sorts of people, and each time, more and more life and memory gets imprinted into the music. In that way, the tune becomes something kind of like a shoebox that you might put an old postcard or a souvenir in and come back to once in a while. I live in California now, but every time I go back to visit home in Kentucky, I try to get together with folks from the area that play. There really aren't that many of them. It's basically a handful of old men, but we'll get together and play. And every time, just before I leave, one of them will tell me a tune I need to learn before I come back the next time. And I always do. I always try to learn those tunes. When I come back and play that tune they asked for, when they hear it, you can see sometimes a kind of disbelief on their face, and then they kind of retreat into their minds a little bit. Once, someone asked me to learn a fiddle tune that older generations of his family had played. So I learned it, and I played it for him, and when I finished, he gave a short laugh, and then his voice got a little quieter, and he looked down to the ground with a smile, and he said, "That brings back some good memories." The beauty of instrumental fiddle tunes like these, and the way that we use them, is that they just hold so much memory for us, and then they also endure. These tunes were around long before we got here, and it seems pretty likely they'll keep on getting played and imprinted on after we leave. We'll play a tune over and over, and they become these shoeboxes full of our memories. And when someone else comes along and plays that tune, they'll have their own memories, but the tune itself will keep on going. And that can give some kind of sense of peace or hope that maybe some of the deeper things that made those memories special or meaningful to us will endure.
Thank you. was whiskey and I was a duck. I dived to the bottom and I never come up.
The Great American Folk Show airs on Prairie Public, a public radio station that relies on the support of listeners like you. If you'd like to support programs like this, please visit prairiepublic.org and become a sustaining member today.
My father, Jim, has an extensive collection of music, mostly cassette tapes, and it's one of my favorite things to do. I love to rummage through this music. Elvis Presley, for example, the complete 50s Masters box set. It's so many best ofs. The best of Al Jolson, the Ink Spots, the Andrews Sisters, Guy Lombardo, two volumes of the Eagles. Over the years, there's been attempts to keep this collection in some kind of order, but mad hands cannot keep from upsetting the balance. And I gotta take the blame here. Those mad hands would be mine. I pick and listen and return for another, and I don't care where I return the one I just finished listening to. I get impatient around music. I'm a compulsive listener. I admit it. I came across the compact disc of artist Sarah Moreau. It's from 2008, and it's called To Hold You. It's a really lovely record. It features jazz standards. It opens with the number Autumn Leaves.
But I'll miss you most of all, my darling, when autumn start to fall.
Oh, such a pretty song. And why is it that wistful music always makes me feel so happy? Sarah Moreau was made to sing, and I'm so glad to have her on the show today. I'd quick like to mention that Max Yonk is playing upright bass with her, and a special thanks to Steve Wallevind for doing her recording session. And that session was funded by a grant from the Arts Partnership. Smiling at me,
nothing but blue skies do I see. Blue birds, they're just singing a song. Nothing but blue skies all day long. Never saw the sun shining so bright. Well, when you're in love, everything is right. Watching all the days hurrying by. When you're in love, my, how they fly, those blue days, all of them gone. And I got nothing but blue skies. Well, I skies, I got nothing but blue skies from now on.
Last year, our mom, Barbara, turned 80, and to honor her, we asked friends and family to submit memories and photos for a special book. Photos and stories came pouring in of our mom as a young girl, one of four siblings, cheeky with ponytails, a young woman, pensive on the ski slopes, a young woman with friends, adventures, and dreams, a sister, a daughter, a wife. My sisters, Melanie, Liz, and I sorted through our own photos and memories and shared with our mom the impact she had on us. To us, she is and was our mom. She was the mom who walked us to school, who was home after school with snacks and homemade soup. For her birthday book, my sister Liz shared a favorite memory of mom making breakfast. In the morning, mom would sometimes make a special breakfast of bacon, sausage and fried potatoes, scrambled eggs, and stewed tomatoes on buttered toast. She'd even sometimes break out the white tablecloth and silver teapot with cream and sugar containers. We grew up drinking tea. It was almost a dessert, rich with whole milk or cream and sugar. It was comforting when mom offered us a cup of tea. And it was comforting when she read books to us and made up stories of her own at bedtime. We all developed a love of the books she shared in her beautiful New Zealand accent. We heard about Peter Rabbit, Winkin, Blinkin, and Nod, and the country bunny in the little gold shoes. In the book, my sister Melanie shared memories of mom teaching her how to make fudge, reading her poems from old books, and mom's gentle voice guiding her to sleep. Both of our parents instilled in us a love of music and language, and we all carry with us mom's snippets of wisdom, quotes, songs, and poetry. And I can hear them now in her voice when she was pushing her grandchildren on the swing. How do you like to go up in a swing, up in the air so blue? Oh, I do think it the pleasantest thing ever a child can do. And then to us, as screaming, shrill teenagers, she quoted Shakespeare. Her voice was soft, sweet, and low, an excellent thing in a woman. At bedtime, she would often say a blessing over us with her hand on our foreheads. The Lord bless you and keep you, and the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord lift up his countenance and give you his peace, both now and evermore. My sisters Melanie, Liz, and I share the memory of mom singing to us most often at bedtime when we were younger, but also when we were not feeling well. She would sing, "You are my sunshine," and "You take the high road," and "Speed, bonny boat," reflecting her Scottish heritage. My sisters and I have carried with us her love of language, storytelling, and singing to our own children. We recognize how blessed we are to have a mom like this who read to us, sang to us, and loves us. My mother often talks about her father, Norm, and his influence on her. He sang, he played piano, and he often quoted poetry. In her 80th birthday book, we have a picture of her parents with a quote that she often heard her dad say by Charles Kingsley. "Be good, sweet maid, and let who will be clever. Do noble things, not dream them all day long. And so make life, death, and that vast forever one grand, sweet song." How much she loved being a mother and adored her children. I imagine we took her for granted. She stayed home with us for most of our childhood, and although we moved a lot, we knew a steadiness and a truth that our mother was always there to love us.
Speed, bonny boat, like a bird on the wing, onward the sailors cry. Carry the lad that is born to be king over the sea to sky. Loud the wind howls, loud the waves roar, thunder claps rend the air. Baffled our foes, stand on the shore, follow, they will not dare. Speed, bonny boat, like a bird on the wing, onward the sailors cry. Carry the lad that is born to be king over the sea to sky. Many's the lad fought on that day, well the claymore did wield. When the night came, silently lain, dead on Culloden field. Speed, bonny boat, like a bird on the wing, onward the sailors cry. Carry the lad that is born to be king over the sea to sky. Though the waves leap, soft will ye sleep, ocean's a royal bed. Rocked in the deep, Flora will keep watch by your weary head. Speed, bonny boat, like a bird on the wing, onward the sailors cry. Carry the lad that is born to be king over the sea to sky.
That was Sarah Moreau, daughter of Jay and Barbara Crow from Grand Forks, North Dakota, with Speed, Bonny Boat, and then before that, Blue Skies. Since Sarah's recording session for the Great American Folk Show, her mother, Barbara, passed away at the age of 80. Barbara was a poet and a writer, easily one of my favorites. And I'd like to end today's program with one of her poems, Easter by Barbara Crow. The daughters are coming home for Easter, bringing friends. It'll be good to have song in the house again and talk of poetry and writing. Watch my silver girls, my three blonde Indians, sparring for a place at my side, slipping about in their new wet skins.
The Great American Folk Show would like to thank Sarah Moreau, Quinn DeVoe, Nina and Teresa Ricci, Clinton Davis, Michael Patrick F. Smith, and Bill Polinuk of Bill Polinuk Studios in Belfield, North Dakota. Opening theme by Sean Watkins in Los Angeles, California. End theme by Berkham Boys in Council Bluffs, Iowa. This program is made possible by a grant from the Lorak family. The Great American Folk Show was written and recorded by Tom Brousseau. Produced and edited by Eric Detheridge and Bill Thomas. I'm Joe Wiegand. May you always find the sun. until we meet again.
For more information about this program, please visit prairiepublic.org. On the next episode of The Great American Folk Show, you might remember her from Saturday Night Live, is actress and comedian Noelle Wells. Poets Shad Peel and Madeline Cameron. Musicians Mark Irelli, Soraya, and Michael Gay, plus Joe Wiegand with more notes from the Badlands. We'll see you then.